Thank you for being here. We are in Genesis 25. I'll read the verses out of the NIV. You've got your notes there in the English Standard Version. The first thing right here, chapter 25, verse 19 in the NIV, it says, "This is the account of Abraham's son, Isaac." If you look right there on your notes, first of all, there's the Hebrew, and I've got it in the box. That's the word Toledot. And it, I've got some explanations. It's translated here in the interlinear, the translation as the generations. But Toledot means generations, genealogy, registration, genealogies, account, birth, order of their birth. And it's used, if you turn to the last two pages, page 8 and 9, it's used throughout the book of Genesis to introduce a new section. And I've mentioned it before, but this is just a real good place. Now, that's how I spell it. You can see it's spelled. There's an E, there's an H, the T sound of the tet. It's used throughout the book of Genesis to introduce a new section. And this is referring in documents, this is referring probably to written documents that Moses had at his disposal in 1440 BC after the Exodus in the wilderness, and he's putting together the history of the Jews. He's putting together the book of beginnings, Genesis. Now, you don't have to accept this. You could maybe have Moses sitting on a mountain writing. You got to accept the fact that Moses wrote Genesis. Jesus referred to it as the books of Moses. But you do not have to think that Moses memorized this and wrote it all down. He had 40 years in the wilderness. He had time. Or that God gave him a vision or a revelation or God dictated it to him. You can think of it, I believe, and I'll show you here, that men wrote things down from the beginning of time. Like Adam could talk, so Adam could probably write, or he eventually figured out a writing system, or very early they did. Again, my humanistic, secular mind that was raised in evolution that, you know, you go back too many years, we're still monkeys just, you know, trying to figure out how to break open a banana or something. And the Bible presents it completely different, fully grown, fully educated, able to communicate with God, with each other, and so man was writing, and history shows, man, we got written documents from, depending on how you date them, but easily 8,000 years ago, you know, possibly 10,000 years ago, depending on what they would date it at. We're putting the schedule right here at, you know, the dates as you see on here. But I think as you look right here, if this means document or inscription or record, of which it means that, Genesis 2:4 is that this is all of the uses of it in the book of Genesis. And so Moses would have taken all these documents and weave them together. What one? Genesis 2:4, this is the account of the heavens. In other words, this is the story, this is the document about the creation of the heavens. Genesis 5:1. Is the book of the generations. Now notice it's translated, account of heavens, generations of Adam. I've got three translations there for you. I got the Hebrew, the New American Standard, the King James, and the interlinear. But Toledot is translated, account of heavens, generations of Adam, or 6:9, the generations or the account of Noah. Now if you notice, beginning in Genesis chapter 6, that's not the generations of Noah, that's the story of Noah. That is, if you read it, that's the diary of Noah. In fact, on the ark that we were just looking at, there was a place in Noah's quarters. They had sections for each of the couples there where they had their material in their rooms. But Noah had a desk and he had a pile of, you know, scrolls, and they were writing in there. And so if you read the book of Genesis, I've said it for years, Genesis, the account of the flood doesn't sound like a legend, it sounds like a diary, you know, on this particular day, on the 100th day, on the 10th day, and then he gives you all the details of what's taking place. And so when it says the generation or the written documents of Noah, that would take from chapter 6, verse 9, up till chapter 10, verse 1, where chapter 10, verse 1 says, this is the generations of Shem. And it begins generation 10, or Genesis 10, 32. These are the genealogies by their nations. This would be another record of the nations on where they were dispersed. Then back to Genesis 11, 10, the generations of Shem. It continues to tell the story of the things that were going on. And then beginning in Genesis 27 is the document from Terah's time, that tells the story up through Abraham, and he's turned the page, that continues up until this chapter, chapter 25, verse 12. After chapter 11, you get the whole account of Abraham. From Terah and all the whole Abraham account that we've been reading, that would be one document that Moses would have used or edited or put together with the rest of them. Beginning in chapter 25, verse 12, this is the Toledot of Ishmael. This is another completely separate document, but it's the generations of Ishmael. Where's all the stories? Well, we're not interested in those stories. This is just the generations. There may be more details in some of these. They were large documents possibly, but they've been reduced by what is Moses' interest in taking out of these documents? Well, the generations of Ishmael. Genesis 25, 13, this is the according to the generations of the firstborn. This is, the generations it's used it twice, 12 and 13, same set of verses. But beginning tonight, 25, 19, this is a new section. After all we've done, this is a new section. It's not just, we're just not continuing the story of Abraham, although we are. We're continuing the promise, but that's a continuation from the garden, a promise of the seed of the woman will crush the serpent's head. And now the promise is continuing. But as far as a document, it says in the New American Standard, now these are the records of the generations of Isaac, or King James, and these are the generations of Isaac. And it's again using that same word, toledot. In chapter 36, we break off of this, and you've got the generations of Esau. 36:9, the generations of Esau are mentioned again. 37:2, the generations of Jacob. So now we're going to get another document recording all the events of Jacob's life, and that's going to take you down to Egypt. So we're going to start now, chapter 25, verse 19, the toledot of Isaac, and it's going to include the birth of his two sons and how that all develops. And the next time we take a break, or Moses would switch to a new document, would be Genesis 37:2. If you look at it that way. But just see that word toledot, it's used throughout Genesis, and it is an important word, and it gives credence to the fact that what we're looking at are legitimate documents. So chapter 25, verse 19, I read this first verse in the NIV again. This is the account, the toledot, of Abraham's son Isaac. Abram became the father of Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he married Rebekah, daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean from Padan Aram, and sister of Laban, the Aramean. Now again, this is north of Israel, Syria area today, up by the Euphrates River. And do notice right here, Rebekah's brother is Laban. That's going to come up a little bit later in our story here tonight, and of course, the story of Jacob. So Isaac marries Rebekah, Laban's sister. Here's our account, here's our story. Isaac prayed to the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was barren. The Lord answered his prayer, and his wife Rebekah became pregnant. The babies jostled each other within her, and she said, "Why is this happening to me?" So she went to inquire of the Lord. Now all this is, we're going to develop all of this here in a moment. The Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you will be separated. The people will be stronger, one people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger." When the time came for her to give birth, there were twin boys in her womb. The first to come out was red, and his whole body was like a hairy garment. So two things, red and hairy. That's going to be the basis of his name. So they named him Esau. After this, his brother came out with his hand grasping Esau's heel. One is identified by the way they looked. The other is identified for what they were doing. And that's going to be the basis for their name. And we'll look at the notes here, but when he the names sometimes reflect the situation that you're in at the moment, like the child, the birth, but also portrays what's going to happen in the future. Sometimes it's prophetic, announcing what's going to take place yet in the future or the anticipation. Esau's and Jacob's names both do that. Identify the beginning, but it also projects what's going to take place in the future. Interesting, Isaac was 60 years old when Rebekah gave birth to them. And that's how we can do this chart. That's how we're writing here. You know, Abraham, Isaac, now is 60 years old right here, 40 years old when he married Rebekah. And again, we can trace this chart, as we've done, all the way back to the beginning. It's not written like a legend. It's written like a document keeping track of how old Adam was, how old Adam was when his kids were born, how old each of the kids were when they had their first kid, and how old they were when they died. Go all the way back, and you take this all the way up until you get into historical events where you can overlap this with the pharaohs and the Philistines and other events in history. And it's like, you've really got a solid document in the scriptures. Again, that's exciting to me. Inside my head, I'm surrounded with evolution. This is a legend. These things are, I've been teaching this stuff for over 40 years, but yet that voice is still in there. It's like, well, we can't be sure, but we think this possibly. It's like, no, what happens to a generation that is not taught humanism, that is not taught evolution, that is taught flat out, historically, scientifically, this is the way it is, that outside of the universe, outside of time, outside of matter, is a God that just spoke this into existence and created time, space, matter, and there it is, and the time began to, we can start counting time now because it was just created, and here we are. What happens to a generation that has that kind of a perspective and isn't polluted with all it's probably going to be a lot like we talk about the chemicals in our food and stuff like that, and all the things in the 60s and 70s. I remember all the things that we were told, don't eat this, don't eat that, and replace it with all these things like, you know, and now we're being told, no, that stuff's all artificial. It's causing all these diseases. What's going to happen to a generation that eats healthy and thinks healthy and follows the Lord? It's like, well, who knows? It's a potential. Okay, that's just a little preaching there, sorry. So Isaac, 60 years old, I'm in verse 27. The boys grew up, and Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the open country, while Jacob was a quiet man, staying among the tents. Isaac, who had a taste for wild game, loved Esau. So there you go. Isaac is going to love Esau. He likes the game. He likes the meat. But Rebekah loved Jacob. Now, again, all these things are talking, this huge stories are reduced to like these compound sentences. Isaac loved Esau. Rebekah loved Jacob. It's like, well, there it is. It's like, yeah, but there's some stories behind that. Tell us some of those stories. Well, that's all you need to know. And all these people, and one of the things that I've had, and you too, I'm sure you can handle it, but these stories are not written down as examples of morality. This is what you should do. These are stories about people that God was using and what they did. Sometimes it was fine. Sometimes it was okay. Sometimes it was good. But a lot of times it's like they're just living like their culture. They're twisted, they're confused, and this is the way they're doing it, and this is what God's got to work with. So it's more of a story about what God is promising, what God is doing, not about Isaac being a good example or Jacob being a good example. Sometimes they follow God, but you turn the page, and next time they're denying God. The book's Bible's not about Peter and his example, although sometimes he did some good things, but that was because God was working. And sometimes Peter failed and God restored him. So the stories of the chapter, the stories about God, not these people and their example, although we learn from it. Again, Hebrews says these things were written down as examples. I think Paul writes that in 2 Corinthians. These are things that were written down as examples for us on whom the fulfillment of the ages has come. But that doesn't mean examples that you're supposed to follow, examples you're supposed to learn from. Now, once when Jacob was cooking some stew, Esau came in from the open country, famished. He said to Jacob, quick, let me have, and that's a key word, quick, let me have some of that red stew. Again, the word red comes up just like his name, just like the land Esau's family is going to settle in, which is Edom, which is the red sand of south of Judah. So you've got red birth, you know, as far as he looks red, the word is like that. He's going to settle in the red land, which is going to be Edom, which matches the name Esau. And now he wants some red meat. So red is something going on in here. And he says, quick, let me have some of that red meat. I'm famished. That is why he was called Edom. Again, which you look down there, it means red. Jacob replied, first, sell me your birthright. And just like he was grasping the heel, he was doing something, wanting something. Here he's, his name's now being fulfilled. He's wanting something from Esau. Esau replies, look, I'm about to die, which I would believe is would be an overstatement, which means now you got this character irrational. He's overstating the facts. Look, I'm about to die. What good is the birthright to me? Whoa, whoa, whoa. Stop and think about it. Abraham, Isaac, and Esau. This is going to be huge. But what good is it to me? But the seed of the woman, we've got Noah, we've got the whole, have you read any of the documents? What good is it to me? I'm going to die. I'm hungry. Well, Jacob's read the documents. I guess that's what he's doing while he's staying around the tents. He's looking through those documents. He realizes, yeah, there's something going on here. From the Garden of Eden, through the promise to Abraham. The Bible doesn't say that, but I'm adding that to the story, that he's reading the Toledotes. Okay, nonetheless, look, I'm about to die, Esau said. What good is the birthright to me? But Jacob said, swear to me first. So he swore an oath to him, selling his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau some bread and some lentil stew. He ate and drank and then got up and left. And in the Hebrew, we'll look at it when we get there. Those are four words, very unique to have four. Those are four verbs, verb, four verbs, and equals he despised. For example, ate, drank, got up, left. And we'll see those words in the English Standard Version. They're a little bit easier to see. But in a rush, he ate, drank, got up, and gone. Basically, he sits down and swallows his lunch. He didn't have a fine dining experience. He got it, swallowed it, and left. And his birthright's gone. He despised the potential for that moment. So Esau despised his birthright. And that's kind of where this is going. And we'll take a look at some of those things as we develop. So going back to the notes, we got the English Standard Version now, chapter 25, verse 19. Some details. These are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham fathered Isaac, got in the square. The word toledot, we've talked about that. And we looked at the notes on the back page is where it refers to in Genesis. This is just another document being sewn in to this. It's authentic. It's real. It's written as a historical document. And Moses, under the inspiration, put it in the book of Genesis. And Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean of Padan Aram, the sister of Laban, the Aramean, to be his wife. And Isaac prayed to the Lord for his wife because she was barren, and the Lord granted his prayer, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. So Isaac is praying. Now again, he's praying to Yahweh. Now this is important. Isaac knows who Yahweh is, and Isaac is praying his wife is barren. And that brings up this point. Well, I've got point one, prayer, the word athar in the Hebrew. It means make supplication, entreat, make supplication, move by prayer. Some commentaries say this word that is used here, athar, is a fervent prayer. It's not just your liturgy, it's not just your evening prayers. It's like it's the same word used when they're praying for the plagues to be, you know, come to an end. It's like they're beseeching God. It's intense prayer. Also notice this point two I thought was interesting as I went through this. All the wives of the patriarchs that produced the heir to the promise were barren until Yahweh intervened. So Sarah is barren until Yahweh intervenes. Rebecca is barren until Yahweh intervenes. Rachel, who is going to be Jacob's favorite wife, but barren, and the son that is born to her that's going to be the heir, she is barren until Yahweh intervenes. Now, that doesn't mean, well, you can see right there, Isaac was the firstborn to Abram. Excuse me. Ishmael was the firstborn. I'm reading it backwards the way I wrote it. So every time the firstborn or natural son was not the heir to the promise. Isaac is the heir, not Ishmael. Ishmael was, what, 14 years old when Isaac was born. Now, Jacob is going to be the heir, not Esau, although Esau was the firstborn. And then the last one there is going to be Joseph is going to be the favored son, not sons 1 through 10. So Rachel, there's going to be 10 sons born to Jacob, but his favorite son is going to go to Joseph. Isaac is the only patriarch to have just one wife. So Abraham had several wives. Jacob himself is going to have four wives. But Isaac, as far as the Bible records, this is his only wife. Chapter 25, verse 22. Chapter 25, verse 22. The children struggled together within her, and she said, now this gets interesting if you're still with me. If it is thus, why is this happening to me? In other words, she feels this struggle, and I've got that in the box there in verse 22 in the Hebrew. But struggled together. And if you look down there, point one, struggled is rotsots. I don't know how to pronounce it in the Hebrew. It means crushed, oppressed, broke, bruised, crushed, crushing, struggled. So struggle is probably the most tamed down word of it. It means they're crushing each other. They're oppressing, they're breaking, they're bruising each other. I mean, if you've seen a baby kick, I remember being when Tony was pregnant with our first son, and I was coaching baseball. She is the scorekeeper in the dugout. This is 1983. And she would sit in the dugout, pregnant and be keeping the scorebook, and all of a sudden her stomach would just move. And I'd gotten used, I'd seen it at home, but I was saying, it's like, what is that? Oh, she says, the baby's kicking. It's like, what? He's like making, I can see his foot coming, it's popping out. And so we were sitting in the dugout, and my catcher was sitting beside her, and sure enough, the foot did the thing, and the catcher goes, whoa, it's like you've seen the Alien movies and all this. It's like, what's that? And it's one of those funny moments where she had a chance to do some instructing to the teenage boys that's the baby moving in my stomach, and they're like, how's that happening? It's like, well, it's a baby just inside her stomach. So anyway, that's what's happening here. I always think of this, that story when I see that. But she is, obviously, she knows what's happening, but it's so intense. Now, when my oldest son or any of my sons, when they moved and we saw their foot move in the womb or something, we weren't like, I don't know, what is going on? But then my wife explained it to me. I didn't have to do what Rebecca did. Look what Rebecca has to do. So she went to inquire of the Lord. Just ask somebody. It's like, that's the baby moving. Right now, I could have answered that question. Well, it's not that she doesn't have anybody around. It's like, this is unusual. No, this is not just the feet moving, the baby turning around. There's a struggle. They're crushing each other. They're bruising each other. This is not normal. And so these people are not, again, in my Sunday school humanistic mind, these people are out in the wilderness, in the desert, living in a tent by themselves for years. Well, they've got wealth, they've got servants, they've got people around. So it's not like she doesn't understand this. She wants to know, what does this mean? Something is happening. Now look at this verse. Look at this next part of this verse. So she went to inquire of the Lord. Now you can blow right by that in your daily reading. So she went to inquire of the Lord, which in our minds, she goes, oh, dear Lord, what does this mean? And then, felt that, so God was impressed that meant, I think there's two nations. And I felt like God spoke to me. I think God led me. It's like, no, she, notice it says, she went. She's going to go somewhere. And what that means is, we'll look at this. This means she's going to go to somewhere, if you allow me to teach it this way, and I'll support it. She's going to go to a prophet or a seer. She's going to go to a priest. She's going to go to a sanctuary. She's going to go somewhere. And when she gets there, she's going to inquire. She's going to ask. She's going to ask Yahweh. She's going to go somewhere. I've got questions. She went to inquire of the Lord. First question, where did she go? How did she inquire? I mean, like, I inquire, you know, dear Lord, would you please lead me and guide me and show me the direction? And then you just, you know, hope the light turns green and turn right and this is the way I'm going. Or God, you know, I mean, what do you do? You roll dice. If it's a 6, I'm going to move here. If it's a 7, I'm going to move there. It's like, you shouldn't do that. That's not the way you follow God. And there's all kinds of examples we could go through how the pagans sought advice or guidance. You know, they'd sacrifice an animal and cut it open, and then they would read the intestines. You know, you remember when we used to do that as kids? But even in the British Museum, they would have, there's models of teaching demonstrations. There's like a peg game that you could, they would show you. The teachers of these religions would then teach their students how to read the intestines of an animal. Nebuchadnezzar used that. Jeremiah prophesied that Nebuchadnezzar will come and he'll stop at a certain point. Shall we go this way or go this way? He'll call the priest. They'll sacrifice the animal. They'll read the intestines and they'll say they were supposed to go this way. They would read smoke. They'd burn an offering and the way the smoke rose or the way it, and I'm not trained in this either. But they would be able to read smoke. There's a variety of ways. You could, the priest in the tabernacle, temple, where eventually you're going to have the Urim and Thummim, two stones with yes on one side and no on the other side. And when they would inquire of the Lord, they'd go to the priest, they'd reach in the ephod, out of behind, in the chest place up here where the breastplate was with the stones on it, the 12 stones for the tribes, they'd take them out, and they would cast them into the lot. They'd sit cross-legged and their skirt, there would be like a table, and they'd cast them on their lap. And if they came up yes, yes, they'd ask the Lord a question, cast the Urim and the Thummim, yes, yes, the answer's yes. No, no, the answer's no. But when God wasn't answering, you know what they couldn't get? They couldn't get doubles. They'd always get yes, no. And they'd try it again, yes, no. And it'd say, and the Lord wasn't answering. And it doesn't give you an example, but the impression is they would roll those Urim and Thummim all day, and it'd be yes, no. But they'd roll them once, it'd be yes, yes, that's the answer. And that was the legitimate way. Now, we're talking about tabernacle, Moses, priesthood. That's not what we're talking about here. But in the pagan ways, they're rolling dice and rolling bones and interpreting things. Nonetheless, she went somewhere to inquire of the Lord. So get in your mind. Rebecca gets on a camel, she gets her servants, something, and she goes someplace, a location. I've got some listed down here. Point two, where? We don't know. But some of the holy places that we know of it that have already appeared in Genesis is Beer Lahoy Roy. That's where Hagar is on her way and she's fleeing, and the Lord appears to her at Beer Lahoy Roy, which means well of the living one who sees me. She named the place, and he had told her, go back and submit to your servant Hagar, and you're going to have a son. And so that's where maybe she goes to that location. There's no reason to believe that, except it's already happened once. Also, we know Bethel's a place that they've got an altar. Hebron, the trees of Mamre, we've seen the remains of the altar there that Abram built. Salem, Melchizedek, and he's got some kind of, that's where Abram took Isaac and offered him, built an altar there. Melchizedek may have been dead by now, but there would be a descendant of his. I mean, she's going somewhere. Is she going to a shrine, a temple? And the thing is, you can't say this is pagan. You say, well, she shouldn't be messing with pagan and ask, well, she's not. She's going to inquire of Yahweh. I mean, look, she is going to go somewhere and inquire of Yahweh. Well, she can't go to Abraham. He's dead. She's not going to go ask Isaac. So who else knows Yahweh? There's somebody. That's exciting. I mean, that adds another dimension to this entire story. There's someone else in the Middle East, in the land of Israel at that time, that knows Yahweh, and their name is? But she's going to go to this prophet, this priest, who's got a shrine, who's got an altar, who's got some way of connecting with Yahweh, and she's going to get an answer. And it is an amazing answer. It's part of Scripture. It prophesizes the future all the way into the end times. So whoever this guy is, again, I'm assuming it's a person. She went, is she going to go off and burn an animal somewhere and read the intestines herself? Here's some more information. Here we go. She went, which is the word halak. It means to go, went, walk, come, depart, gone. Indicates she traveled to a location, a sanctuary, a prophet, a priest. Here is some examples. I'm going to give you some insight into this. And you've got to hear this. Note, Rebekah's brother, Laban, remember, Jacob's going to go up there, and he's going to get two of Laban's daughters, Rachel being one of them, and two of the handmaidens, and they're going to start, because he's going to have four wives. They're all going to come from Laban, two daughters and two handmaidens for the of the daughters. And Rachel's his favorite daughter, but she's not going to get pregnant until the other three have already produced 10 sons. And then Laban's been dealing with Jacob for some 20 years, and you know that story, we're going to get there. But Jacob decides, he tells his wives, he says, we got to get out of here. I mean, this guy's ripping me off. He's changing my wages. We're leaving. We're going to flee. So they start fleeing. They head back from Syria, coming back down to the land of Canaan, down to Israel. Here's some information right here. Genesis chapter 30, verse 27. It's coming up. As soon as Rachel had born Joseph, Jacob said to Laban, so now Rachel's had her first son, Benjamin's not born yet, the last son. Jacob, who is Isaac's second son that we're talking about tonight when he gets married up in Syria, he goes and marries the daughters of his mother's brother. Okay, he says to his mom's brother, Laban, send me away, meaning it's time to go, I want to go back home, that I may go to my own home and country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, that I may go. For you know that service that I have given you. In other words, I'm done. Our contract is expired. I'm going to go back. But Laban, now watch this. But Laban said to him, if I have found favor in your sight, I have learned by divination that the Lord, that Yahweh, has blessed me because of you. He says, while I'm over here practicing my divination, trying to hear from the spiritual realm, if he's praying, if he's burning incense, it's not temple worship, it's not a Christian church service, it's him by divination trying to communicate with Yahweh. Now, you're on slippery territory, right? This is dangerous turf right here. But he's communicating with Yahweh. It says right here. Remember Balaam? King Balak sent for Balaam, who was a seer up in this same area. And he was known because he could communicate and get revelation from Yahweh. Balak sends for Balaam in the book of Numbers to come down and curse Israel because there's so many people and they're going to take over the land. So now he goes up to get Balaam, and Balaam says, I can only say what Yahweh gives me to say. I can't just make stuff up. I'm not a TV evangelist. We're not just building a large chapel here. I'm a prophet. I've got to speak what Yahweh gives me. Balak says, fine, I'll still pay you. And in fact, before he left, remember, the Lord appeared to him. In fact, Balaam asked, when the servants from Balaam, I'm way off subject, stay with me. Let me see what time it is. Balak sent his servants up to talk to Balaam, and they says, we'll give you money, come down and do what Balak wants. He said, I've got to first ask Yahweh before I can go. He prays that night, however he prayed. I mean, what did he do? Did he have a little cross, you know, to represent Jesus? Did he have a little high priest doll to represent the tabernacle? Probably no on both those cases. Somehow he's making communication. Somehow all the way through time, Yahweh has not been, he's been communicating with people, possibly around the world. He's going to purify his religion with the temple. He's going to purify the temple with the coming of Christ and the filling of the Spirit and the creating of his church. But you just keep going back. He's not been waiting for, you know, the Methodist church to start. I mean, he's been communicating with people all the way back. Some of it he no longer tolerates, including animal sacrifices in the temple. You understand? I mean, it's like, well, are we supposed to have animal sacrifices? No, that's what he had them do then. Now, read the book of Hebrews. Don't do that. Well, is it possible that before the temple was instituted and he purified the religion with the priest, that only Aaron can be the priest? That before that he was accepting other, I don't want to start speaking for Yahweh, but Balaam is talking to Yahweh and Yahweh says, no, don't go. They said, we'll give you a lot of money. So Balaam prayed again the next night and God says, okay, you can go, but you're on slippery turf. He says, you be very careful. So he goes. And even the donkey, remember the donkey story? He goes down and tries to curse the people five times from five different mountains after five different altars that he built, five different altars, offered five different sacrifices. And every time when he pronounced the curse, he blesses the people of Israel and curses Balak. And Balak is so mad. Well, anyway, the whole point of that is there was a prophet trying to curse Israel who was a Gentile, working for a Gentile king, and Yahweh was speaking through him, and what he was speaking even talks about, I see a star from Jacob, a star is rising out of Jacob. He said, I see him, not now, but he's coming. He's going to crush you guys. He's talking about the Messiah. So he's prophesying about the Messiah. Okay. So Laban said to him, if I have found favor in your sight, I have learned by divination the Lord has blessed me because of you. Name your wages and I will give it. He says, the only reason I went by through divination, the only reason I'm so prosperous right now is because you're working for me. Yahweh is blessing me because you don't leave. So Laban is practicing divination. That's just an example of seeking the Lord some other way. Okay, Genesis 31:34. You know this verse also. Finally, Jacob's had enough. I'm going to leave. So he's going to run away with his wives and his children. Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the hill country, and Laban with his kinsmen pitched his tents in the hill country of Gilead. That's just west or east of the Sea of Galilee, in that area. And Laban said to Jacob, what have you done that you have tricked me and driven away my daughters like captives of the sword? So he took the flock, he took his daughter, took all the grandchildren, and he's running back to Israel. Why did you flee secretly and trick me and did not tell me so that I might have sent you away with mirth and song? We would have had a going away party. We would have had incense and we would have had singing and good food with tambourine and lyre. We would have brought in some big group. And why did you not permit me to kiss my sons and my daughters farewell? In other words, my grandchildren. Now you have done foolishly. It is in my power to do to you harm. I came down to do you harm, but God of your father spoke to me last night. He says, I'm approaching you. I'm going to attack you today. But last night, your God, Abraham, Isaac, and your God spoke to me saying, be careful not to say anything to Jacob, either good or bad. I mean, he gets the same message that Balaam has. Be careful. You don't want to mess with these people. And Laban says, I came down to strike you and take my family back. But Yahweh says, don't do anything. Don't say anything good. Don't say anything bad. You just leave him alone. And now you have gone away because you long greatly for your father's house. But here's his question. Now watch his question. I'm not sure if you're interested in this or not. But here's his question. But why did you steal my gods? And those, and you can find them, archaeologists have, they're images of different powers that they would use, and through those gods, they would communicate with the spirits. They'd be like divination, they'd burn incense, and that's how they would receive, they'd get in some kind of a zone, get in some kind of spiritual state. Because and Jacob answered to Laban, because I was afraid, meaning why did I run? I'm afraid, and I thought that you would take your daughters from me by force, that you'd strike me and take my family, which Laban intended to do that day. Anyone with whom you find your gods shall not live. It's, we didn't take your gods. In the presence of your kinsmen, point out what I have that is yours and take it. So he ends up going through everybody's stuff but Rachel's, who's sitting on them. And the promise right here is anyone who has your gods will not live. And Rachel doesn't stand up, so he can't check her bag, but that's where they're at. And guess what happens to Rachel? I mean, she gives birth to Benjamin and she dies, so that curse comes on Rachel. But nonetheless, they had God. So that's just a couple indications there. As you can see, there's divination going on there. They're communicating with gods. And I don't encourage that by any means. I don't encourage you to read the intestines of an animal. I don't encourage you to roll dice for guidance from God. Nor do I encourage you to, you know, go to the temple and offer a animal sacrifice in Jerusalem. That's not what God does. Through name of Jesus, you can pray to God directly, come through Jesus. We understand this. Okay. The phrase, point three, inquire of the Lord can mean these things. This is what she's going to inquire of the Lord. Depending on the Lord instead of other deities, as in Isaiah 31 and Jeremiah 10. Here's two verses where the word inquire of the Lord is used. Isaiah says this, "Woe to those who go down to Egypt for help and rely on horses, who trust in chariots because they are many, and in horsemen because they are very strong, but do not look to the Holy One of Israel or consult the Lord." That right there, consult the Lord, is the same word in the Hebrew as or inquire of the Lord. So cursed are you if you're going to go trust Egypt, you're going to go get horses, you're going to build up your military, but you do not look to the Holy One, which would be God or the Son of God himself, or consult Yahweh, inquire of Yahweh. Jeremiah 10:21, Jeremiah uses the same word. "For the shepherds," and the shepherds here are the political leaders of Israel. They would be the political leaders between 605 and 586 BC in Israel. "For the shepherds are stupid and do not inquire of the Lord." The shepherds are stupid and do not inquire of the Lord. Just like Rebecca has enough sense to go and inquire of the Lord, what is going on inside me? In Israel, say 600 BC, 592 BC, the leaders were stupid because they did not inquire of the Lord. They got together. Well, here's what it says. "Therefore they have not prospered and their flock is scattered." At the formal act of for an oracle of Yahweh through a legitimate prophet is an option, and then visiting a shrine or temple. Oh, this is another good example. I won't read the whole thing. 2 Kings chapter 8, verse 7 through 15. Elisha goes all the way up into Syria, into Damascus, the prophet, Elijah's, you know, spiritual son. And Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, was sick. And when Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, hears that Elijah is in his capital city, who has come out of Israel and come up into his own country, in his own city, he was told, "The man of God has come here." In other words, Elisha's reputation is in another country. This man is a man of God, meaning this man speaks for God. The king said to Hazael, Hazael is his assistant, his vice king. He says, "Take a present with you and go meet the man of God and," here it is, "inquire of the Lord through him." So there you've got the king of Syria, Ben-Hadad, sending his assistant, his, you know, vice king, to ask Elisha or inquire of God and ask him a question. His question is, "Am I going to recover?" If you read the story, the answer is, Elisha says, "Yes, you will recover," and then starts staring at Hazael and weeping. And Hazael becomes very nervous and says, "Why?" And basically the point is, Ben-Hadad is going to recover, but Hazael, when he recovers, Ben-Hadad recovers, is going to smother him with a pillow so he can say, "Oh, he died," and take over the kingdom. But when Hazael becomes king, he's going to attack the northern 10 tribes and destroy so many Israelites, and Elisha sees all this happening. So the point right there, Rebecca has asked, inquired of the Lord, "What does this mean? There's a fight going on in me, a crushing, not just like a foot moving. You know, I can't just see my baby moving. There's something going on." So she goes to, I'm going to say, a man of God. It doesn't say that in the text, but she goes somewhere and she inquires of Yahweh. And if you go somewhere, you're going to go to a location and you're going to either have a shrine, an altar, or a prophet there, a priest, and you're going to ask the prophet to inquire of the Lord for you. Now again, we would go to our rooms, shut the door, we would pray and ask God to lead and guide us. I don't know if we'd expect, you know, an angel to knock on the door, or you have that soft, still voice, or how do you know? You got to learn how to test the spirits. Chapter 25, verse 23. And the Lord said to her. Now, we skip the prophet. This prophet is just the vessel. So here's the word. Again, I'll say this so you don't get upset. The Bible here says nothing about a prophet or the location. It just says she goes and inquires of the Lord. Maybe she went out to the pond in the backyard and prays, and God comes down and sends an angel and talks to her. He did to Hagar. The Lord appeared and spoke to Hagar. So maybe the Lord appears to her. I mean, the Lord appears. So she goes somewhere, maybe down to that place where Hagar was, and the Lord appears to her just like he did to Hagar. That's possible. Nonetheless, here's what the Lord says to her. I think it's through a prophet of some sort, but you understand my evidence. He says, two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you shall be divided. There's two nations, and they're going to divide. The one shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger. Now, that's radical, because in the culture, the oldest son received the inheritance. When her days to give birth were completed, behold, there were twins in her womb. The first came out, red all his body like hairy cloth, and they called him Esau. Afterward, his brother came out with his hand holding Esau's heel, so his name was called Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. So he's a 60-year-old man, and he has his first child, which is twins. And again, I point out that Jacob was grasping a heel. Now it talks about when they grew up and what takes place. But the great message is right there, that this is the nation of Israel and the nation of Edom are in her womb, and that one is going to become greater, and that the older shall serve the younger. And that's the history goes all the way through the Old Testament. Edom's always in the picture. Herod was an Edomite, his family. Even you get into Herod was an Edomite, and that means his sons, Archelaus, Herod Archelaus, the first Archelaus, no, help me out. And Antipater, Archelaus, the two kings, Herods in the New Testament, in the book of Acts. You know, they cut off James's head. And then he died of worms, and then his son becomes, and he listens to with Festus, he listens to Paul speak. What's their name? Herod Agrippa. Sorry. See, this, I'm experiencing this more and more. See what you just saw? And I can't remember. And it is a concern. It is a concern that Tony and I are in counseling with each other. It's like, when do you just stop? Because it's like, you know, the king in the New Testament. There's two of them. It's like Agrippa. Anyway, Paul presents the gospel to Herod Agrippa II in Caesarea, and he is a descendant of Esau. Anyway, he was also related to the Maccabees, and so he's part of Jacob also. I will pray. I appreciate your time, and thank you so much for being here. Father, we thank you for the chance to look into these things. We ask that we may take them to heart, that we ourselves would seek you, that we would inquire of you, that we would desire your will, that we would not despise the things you've promised to give us, that we would seek the things above instead of the things on this earth, that we would not quickly rush through all the thrills and joys of this earth and forsake the things you've called us to do. And even though it may be hard for us to discern sometimes, we ask that you'd give us patience, you'd give us direction, and you'd continue to show your mercy and grace to us, that we may produce the things you've called us to at this time in history and for all of eternity. We do thank you for being sons of God at this time in history, and ask that we would treat you and approach you in the right way through Jesus Christ our Lord. And in his name we pray. Amen. Thank you for your time. Thank you for being here.